hoping the streets will somehow occupy your mind. You fight the hurt when you're alone. Seems as though reality dropped another life at your feet. Now that you face another day, it leaves you feeling like you'd like to take it home. Your eyes see things and say, no way. Feels like there's an enemy in everyone who loves you. Tell me,
do you really think that
the government cares about you?
No, they don't.
Ghetto people, who you gonna turn to next?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen to me, I'm trying to tell y'all, yeah.
Ghetto people.
Self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Show some love for yourself, people.
Life can take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having. Chances are the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need. You really want inside can only come from you. The day will come when all of your pride leaves you standing around looking like, what am I gonna do? You have those feelings deep inside, a strange kind of sadness you can never get used to.
Ghetto people,
what are you trying to prove?
Come on, tell me, y'all.
Do you really think that
the world gives a damn about you?
Hell no, it don't.
Ghetto people,
who you gonna turn to?
Who you gonna turn to?
Listen, people, you better take a look at yourself, yeah.
Talking to my people,
but you just don't see
what you're living
at. Living like you're living,
living like you're living.
Caught up in the make-believe,
lost in your dreams.
Ghetto people,
stop giving up your self-respect.
Stop it,
ghetto people.
Talking to my people, yeah.
Take some strange turns on you. Living with the things thrown at you leaves you in the cold with a day that's not worth having.
Chances on the shortfalls of greed won't ever come to feel what you need when what you really want inside can only come from
with your life.
Running like a rare disease.
Running like a rare disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, yo. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah.
Ghetto people.
Ghetto people.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves
Kemet. This call Kemet, is being recorded.
And Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Maafa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them. We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So he poured his libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well with you today. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you wanted to do, need to do, must do, should do, better do, can do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, I know you got it done anyway, because that's the kind of brother and sister you is. You get it done. You don't put things off. You get it done. That's the kind of sister and brother you is. Good morning, family. It is a great day. Today we're going to have a tribute to Dr. Bobby Wright, one of my heroes. If you know me, you know that Bobby Wright and Dr. John Henry Clark is probably up there in terms of people who I deeply admire and respect. All of them, though, Dr. Amos Wilson, all warrior scholars. If you're a warrior scholar, if you believe in independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people, then you my man, you my woman, because that's what this program is about. That's what we talk about, because as far as we're concerned, there is no other discussion. And if there is some discussion about it, the only discussion is how do we achieve it? Because it's, to me, it's ludicrous and asinine to talk to another brother and sister about us being free, us being self-determining, us being sovereign. That's crazy. The only discussion we need to have is how do we do it? This program, of course, is every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, or any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen live, you can go to the archives. My good brother and friend, Brother Kwaku, has set it up. So all you got to do is go to Time for an Awakening. Click on the, scroll down to the right with the African Red, Black, and Green Lion and with African Pogues on it. Hit that and then go to the podcast and bam, there they are. They're titled, dated, and there's a little synopsis. And my brother was doing good work. And I appreciate that. So you can listen to the previously recorded programs here on Time for Awakening African Perspectives with me. Also on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 p.m. All times I'm going to give are Eastern Time, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Right after Acres of Diamonds from 6 to 8 is Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 p.m. to 10. Wednesdays from 8 to 10, POC, Revive, Proof of Consciousness, POC with Revive from 8 to 10. On Thursdays, it's Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People in the Spirit of Ujamaa, or Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. And of course, once again, I will consistently promote Cafe ULU. And I'm consistently promoting ULU because you need to have a Cafe ULU in your community. But that's just the beginning, because the whole desire and design is to provide goods and service for our people, to provide jobs for our people, by our people believing in each other, trusting each other, respecting each other, and pulling our resources, pulling our money together, developing the men and women with expertise to make things happen. Cafe Ulu is open Monday through Friday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. On Saturday and Sunday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Its location is 2036 Sylvan Road in Atlanta, the Sylvan Plaza. Check us out. We specialize in coffee. Coffee is our thing. We got coffee from Cameroon, Tanzania, Kenya, Ethiopia, more, Brazil, Panama. And we're getting coffee from other African countries. And you check out Cafe Ulu. Check the website out. C-A-F-E-U-L-U. C-A-F-E-U-L-U.com. Also, check out usliftingus.com. Usliftingus.com. And there is an article. You can go online. Put it into Google. InTheseTimes.com. InTheseTimes.com. The article is Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. Outstanding article. Drink Your Coffee Black Owned. So, on Friday, if it's Friday, and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, that's right, brothers and sisters, that's the time for an awakening. It's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard, 8 p.m. until on Friday. Saturday, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore, 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it is not me, it is Sister POC, Proof of Consciousness. Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until, once again, it's time for an awakening. You can call us here on our call-in line at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. This weekend, this Saturday, is the 21st Century Black Survival Conference right here in Atlanta at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. It's brought to you by Straight Black Pride, the Straight Black Pride Radio Network. We'll have a guest on Friday, Brother Kifuyu. Brother Kifuyu is a good brother right here in Atlanta, and we'll be talking about this conference. There are three areas of focus, and those three areas are spirituality, culture, and survival. The spirituality component will be handled by Dr. Ashwa Kwesi. Ashwa Kwesi is a master teacher of history and spirituality, and his topic will be the origins of the Bible and Quran. The culture component would be Baba Mwalimu Baruti. Baba Baruti is a great friend, and he will talk about a warrior's character. A warrior's character. And survival, the irritated genie, African survival in the 21st century. You can contact Brother Kifuyu. You can contact, or you can, well, let me look at this here. They have a meet and greet on Friday in Lithonia, at the Black Dock Bookstore, 6984 Main Street in Lithonia, here in Georgia. And the principals will be there, the meet and greet of the 21st Century Black Survival Conference. And then, of course, the conference is that Saturday, and at the Shrine of Black Madonna, doors open up at 12 noon. Also, too, let me backtrack on Ulu. Our grand opening is this Saturday. Ulu's grand opening is this Saturday, and I'm hoping that those in my voice or those in the Atlanta area specifically will be able to attend our grand opening. There'll be all kinds of things happening. There'll be live entertainment, coffee tasting, and all kinds of good stuff. So. Today, we're going to pay tribute to Dr. Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright, a little bio. Let me say this for me, because in 1980, when I was living in Milwaukee, on the Milwaukee Fire Department, recently married at the time, they had a program at the Hyatt Regency. They had just built the Hyatt Regency Hotel. And one of the first events that they held was a black political convention. I met Ron Daniels, a few others. But the banquet speaker that Saturday evening was Dr. Bobby Wright. I had never heard of Dr. Bobby Wright prior to that. And I listened intently. And he talked about menticide. And he gave an analogy or an example. He said, you're watching the basketball game. You're watching the Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish against some other school. And the announcer on it, you know, when they got a rebound, they're coming and says, here come the Irish. Here come the Irish. And you got five brothers on the court. And he's talking about here come the Irish. It's just like my thing against Giannis, not against Giannis himself, the young man, no, but against how they market stuff. Because Giannis Antetokounmpo is not Greek. He may be born in Greece, but he is not Greek. His parents are Nigerian. They are Nigerian. It's just like those of us who are born, wherever we're born, that's like me. That's why I always use the term African, and then put, because Africa is the noun. The word in front of, because a noun describes a person, place, or thing. What goes in front of that is what is being descriptive. So for me, we are Africans. And if you are in America, you're an American African. If you were born in Greece, you are a Greek African. You know, but of course, there's a big legion in Milwaukee who are Greek, who come out and they cheer him. You know, they call him the Greek freak. And from a marketing standpoint, I understand all of that madness. But the bottom line is, that's part of the menticide. And menticide, as Dr. Bobby Wright describes it, is a deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind, with the ultimate objective being the extermination of that group. Dr. Bobby Eugene Wright was born March 1st in 1934 in Hobson City, Alabama. He passed April 6th, 2 days after King's assassination death in 1982 in Chicago. He was a clinical psychologist, scholar, educator, political activist, and a humanitarian. He received his BA in education in counseling from Chicago State University, his PhD in clinical psychology from the University of Chicago in 72. At the point of his untimely death, he was elected president of the Association of Black Psychologists. During the mid-60s, he worked as a truant officer in Chicago's public school system and led a successful challenge to racist hiring practices for American African teachers. His political work has been credited with helping lay foundations that later enable the election of Chicago's the first American African mayor, Harold Washington, in 1983. Two of his scholarly works have been described as highly influential by the 2013 National Conference of American African Psychologists, The Psychopathic Racial Personality, which is one of my favorites, which I will be reading, which has been republished in 74 as well as in 84 and other years in a series of essays, and Menticide, The Ultimate Threat to African Survival. He has been classed in the radical school of American African psychology of the time. Those who developed a self-consciously independent framework in opposition to the dominant worldview stemming from Europeans, many of whom were influenced by Franz Fanon. By contrast with traditionalists, he who worked with the American Psychology Society of the time and critique but did not correct, or reformers who were partially independent and appealed to change to both black and white cultures. He also wrote The Black Child, A Destiny in Jeopardy, which is a very good piece. He attributed to political process concerning the continent of Africa and Pan-Africanism. Dr. Bobby Wright. Where he worked at was the Garfield Park Mental Health Institute. It was renamed in his honor, the Bobby E. Wright Comprehensive Mental Health Institute in Chicago. Overall, his work would emphasize the need to recognize psychological war, racial warfare, and for Africans to defend themselves in their terms while analyzing the psychology of Caucasian supremacy or Caucasian extremism, not only of its victims, and to develop a durable social theory associated institutions to change the politics of mental health. And as he always talked about, developing a social theory, Dr. Bobby Wright. I'm going to play a piece for Bobby Wright. Because one thing about YouTube, you can let the ancestors speak. That's why I'm always imploring our listeners to go to YouTube, pull up some of our great ancestors and contemporaries. They're there. They're there. This is Dr. Bobby Wright, Menticide and White Psychopathology. Menticide and White Psychopathology.
Honor for those kind words. Habari Ghani brothers and sisters, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It was a great deal of feeling that I'd be here tonight in Seattle. In spite of all the jokes I make about it, I have a long history with some of the people here in Seattle. For a long time, Zakiya here, I remember Zakiya as a very young person, a very young student, who came into our independent school in the 1960s. And out of that school, we lost 17 students who were her classmates, 17 young black brothers who were students of mine, Fred Hampton probably being the most famous one. So I stand in blood before you, and I take that very seriously. I'm a very feeling person. I have a very great deal of love for black people, because unlike most blacks who you read about and hear about, I've never experienced all those negative things from black people. I've been extremely well loved throughout my life. I've never had all the things that happened to me that have happened to, that I read about happening to other black people. And so I've dedicated my life to just one objective, and that is to assist in the liberation of the minds of black people, and therefore liberation then of their bodies. That is my sole reason for being. And it is the only reason, of course, that I would appear before you tonight. And I would hope that we would have a chance to really understand one another. Most certainly I would say things that relate to some of you because of your personal lifestyle. That is not my intent. I have no fight with black people. I never in my life have used words like Tom. I never in my life have used words like nigger. I'm not that type of person. I have one enemy, and that enemy is the white race. No other enemies do I have. And therefore, I'm at total war with that enemy, the enemy who has for 362 years waged unrelenting war against my people. And I have no time to have internal conflicts. I do take issue with brothers because of their political position, but it's not personal. It's a political position. And so with that being a background, I'd like to say to you that the most important thing that has happened to me was left out of the present of the introduction, inadvertently. And that was the fact that I grew up, I was born and raised in an all-black town in Alabama. For the first 17 years of my life, I had all-black teachers, all-black role models, black people who loved me, who protected me, who raised me, who fed me, who nurtured me, and also who educated me. And I would like to say, as I say all the time, that there's a difference between education and training, and therefore, the difference between education and training, I'm fortunate because I was educated by black people, and I was trained at the University of Chicago. Unfortunately, people, black people, as part of the Mill South process, black people are more impressed with the fact that I was trained at the University of Chicago than the fact that I was educated by black people in Alabama. And with that, I'm going to take a sort of different tag with men aside tonight, because, and I'm going to lay it in some ways that all of us can sort of understand, and although we may lick. This will be published in about 3 weeks. In about 3 weeks, Third World Press will publish what I'm going to talk to you about tonight. And I'm just going to introduce it, and you'll have to get the publication from Third World Press, and it will be out here. I would also like to say to Karumu and all the other brothers and sisters who I worked with over the years that I really appreciate being here and being loved so by them. I mean, there have been many times I've been places which my weapon was not as good as it was tonight. And in fact, of a time when I had to almost run out of the place, they were always stood tall and stood behind me. Tonight I'm going to talk about menticide, and I'll start by telling you one of the problems in talking about a theory. One of the most difficult tasks of a black scholar, one of the most difficult tasks of a black person who thinks, is to be able to analyze the influence of racism, or racist, on black behavior and attitudes, be able to do that analyzation, and at the same time escape the almost irresistible Western scholarship protective barrier. Western scholarship in the Western world, that is their protection. They have a barrier, and they call it scholarship. And it protects them so well that even when you begin to study racism, you end back up studying the victim, doing an analysis of their victims. That's what is happening. So there's no question that this analysis of the victim methodology has been a major scientific development of white sciences because it effectively leads away from the cause of our condition, which is white pathology. It leads you away from that once you get into it, because the way the scholarship is set up. One of the results is that the position is usually taken that one should not even imply to the black masses our truly weak position for fear of immobilizing them. In other words, you shouldn't talk about all the conditions of blacks because you immobilize them, which are a condition which already exists. While others take the position that whites have power over blacks at all. Now, this is due to the all-powerful but non-existent white concept of free will. Free will, which has us in all sort of trouble. All sort of trouble, this idea that you got free will. Namely, that people always have choices, and you have choices, since you have free will. Therefore, you can be held responsible for your behavior. And that free will, of course, that I spoke to last night, that free will, what it leads to then, it leads to a great deal of negative behavior. And it leads to rugged individualism. Therefore, to give you a type of analysis, analogy, and I'm not trying to be humorous. I know many things I say are humorous, but I like to use analogies as African people have done throughout history. Is that the analogy I have is that whites have us fighting over deck chairs on the Titanic. Got us fighting over deck chairs on the Titanic while they have taken the life oath and gone. And some brothers and sisters want to argue on what class we're in. What class wins? We had a brother like Brother Wilson back at the University of Chicago, who's the head of the sociology department that I said last night, who wrote this book, The Decline and Significance of Race. Race is declining in significance, now it's class in economics. And of course, the mere fact that the brother is married to a white girl means that race declines every night in significance, especially when they go to bed. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me. I'm very aware of what happens when you expose the human personality to dangerous stimuli. I'm a very serious behavior scientist. I'm very aware of that. However, there comes a time when the risk of exposure is insignificant when compared to the alternative. And to paraphrase a type of mental health truth, which is a mental health truth, the greatest pathology in the world, the greatest sickness in the world, it's for people to believe in something just because they wish it to be so. That's the greatest pathology you can have. For you to believe in something just because you wish it to be so. And that's what most of us are. For example, if you take suicide, let's deal with that for a minute because that's what the publication will be about. And I want to use that just to deliver this. In the not too distant past, suicide in the black community was virtually non-existent. In fact, when our comedians were really comedians, they used to joke about it. How can a black commit suicide jumping out of a basement window? Things like that, you know. The fact that the black committed suicide by attacking the policeman's club with his head. Things like that, you know. Somebody in my town where I grew up, if somebody come up talk about somebody kill himself, everybody be looking for who killed him. But that's a further understanding if you begin to do this analysis. One of the things I have to say right away, and then maybe this will give you some understanding of where I'm coming from. The most serious mistake you can make, along with that greatest pathology, the most serious mistake you can make is to try to use white definitions, to try to define and understand black phenomena, black behavior. The most serious thing, to use white definitions. Well, he who defines rules. If you accept my definition of the world, I will rule you. And so you see, look here, we're in this science lab. No question about it, look here. See, since I've been in school, they don't even add the most stuff to that table. The table wasn't bad enough, hard enough as it is. Now they had something else they were talking about. Now, what they tell you, oh no, Dr. Wright, this is objective. This is objective. This is science. This is science. You know what science is? A group of white men and women getting in a room and say, this is the way the world is. If you disagree with us, we'll kill you or we'll flunk you. That's simple. So this is no more objective than anything else in the world. This table up here is some science and white people gotten together and say, this is science. Here's a definition of this, here's a definition of that, here's that. And let me tell you about definitions. They do not have to correspond to any reality. As long as they are useful in understanding some phenomena. That's the whole thing about science. Science does not have to deal with reality. Does not have to deal with a reality. Astronomy cannot prove anything. No one's been out there and touched a star. No one can, but they can infer. And then once you accept that definition, then you have a science called astronomy. Brothers and sisters got astrology. What sign are you? I knew that was some reason we couldn't get along. You know, they even dropped that one on us. Astrology. What sign are you? And I had some students in the free school once to do a research. I want you all to get on the L, which is the subway. And I want you all to get on the L. And I want you all to where the blacks ride. Because, you know, unlike you all, most of you have not been to Chicago and got into a cause for a shock. Because we got block after block, mile after mile, of nothing but black folks. We got more black folks in two housing projects than you all got in the entire Northwest. I mean, so when I talk about black folks, I'm talking about black folks, you know. And we don't have that. Who are we? Why are we here, you know? I had them to get on the subway where all the blacks ride and pick up the newspapers and bring them back to class the exact way they brought. They picked them up on the air. The exact way they picked them up, bring them back to class. We're doing this research. Sure enough, every paper that they picked up on that subway, and I mean they picked them up, the papers were about 10, 15 cents. Every paper they picked up was either turned to Ann Landers or turned to the astrology page. Astrology page. So right every day, if you notice, watch this. Whenever we get papers, that's how serious people, that's how their mental side is programmed up. And mental side, as I told you, is defined, as the sister told you, is defined as the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind, with the ultimate purpose being the extermination of that group. He who controls minds controls behinds. He who controls the brain controls behavior. Very simple. Nothing complex about that. So you have blacks, if you look on the paper, they'll turn straight past the front page. Stop at Ann Landers, and then go to the astrology page, and then put the paper down. Put the paper down. And even men of you, I'm not serious here, carry on serious discussion about astrology. Now let's just deal with that mental style process. How can you deal with astrology when they admit that Julius Caesar decided to put a month in? You know, here they screwed it up so much that we got February, 28 days. And by the way, that's our month. They gave us the shortest month in the year. And I'm making a suggestion here tonight, and I hope you carry it on. Let us start having in January 1st, because I'm getting tired of traveling for 30 days every year. Let us start in January 1st, I'm very serious, having Black History Year and White History Month, White History Week. Seriously. Let's start Black History Month. Let's stop it all together. It's time to cut off the nonsense of this. Why should we study black history 1 month out of a year and we black folks? That's mental side. You don't hear Italian month, history month. You don't hear Irish history month, Jewish history month. Number one, they ain't got no history. But anyway, you know, you don't hear. Yes, they do. Let me stop you. Yes, they do have history. Yes, they do.
The eminent Dr. Bobby Wright. Dr. Bobby Wright, as far as I'm concerned, was the type of warrior scholar, psychologist, that unfortunately we don't have today, which is needed more so today than ever before, to help us understand all the dynamics that are coming at us. But he laid the groundwork with Dr. Frances Cress Welsing, and may God be pleased with her work, expounded upon, and all the other Naeem Akbar, Wade Nobles, and many other African psychologists and psychiatrists. But his great work, The Psychopathic Racial Personality, in requiring consciousness, because when I was a young person back in the 60s, I got involved, and then I kind of lost my way, like many people, like others did. And of course, affirmative action came in. I got on the fire department. But getting on the fire department was a blessing for me, because I had the opportunity to now to learn to read information about us. And I had two cassette tapes that I played over and over again. One was Dr. Clark, and the other one was Bobby Wright, The Psychopathic Racial Personality. It is a dynamic essay. If you have a bookstore in your community, I would suggest that you go to that bookstore and pick it up or ask the proprietor to please order it for you, or go on Amazon, or go wherever you have to go. If you don't want to do that, you can go online. He has a presentation on the psychopathic racial personality. It's about an hour and a half long or something like that. Well worth it. He says, in a bullfight, after being brutalized while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, there comes a time when the bull, and I'm going to be making comments through this essay based on my understanding and based on my love for it. In fact, understand this. Bulls are colorblind. Bulls don't see. If when you look at the matador, and understand another thing about when bullfighting came into Spain was that around the same time that the Moors and the Sephardic Jews were kicked out of Spain. Here's the interesting part. A bull does not see color, but as you see, the matador has a interesting outfit on with rhinestones and all kind of regalia, and he has a cape, and usually the color of the cape is red. The bull does not see color. He charges after anything that moves. And so when you think about it, the matador is stoic, and he just moves the cape. He shuffles and moves the cape, and the bull charges at the cape. He continues to charge at the cape. And the objective of the bullfighter is to kill the bull. As the bull begins to pass, he keeps stabbing the bull with swords and spears. He keeps, stabbing the bull until finally the bull sees him. In a bullfight, after being brutalized while making innumerable charges at the movement of a cape, there comes a time when the bull finally turns and faces its adversary, with only the movement being its heaving bloody sides. It is believed that for the first time, he finally really sees the matador. This moment, this final confrontation, is known as the moment of truth. But for the bull, this moment comes too late. And of course, in that history, the bull represents us. And of course, the matador is the Caucasian and the Caucasian people. It's an outstanding analogy. And we finally see the cracker for who and what they are. But the moment it comes too late. And then, of course, we're killed. In fact, they cut off the nuts. Yeah, and eat them. All the other parts of the bull. The experience of African people all over the world presents an analogous situation. For hundreds of years, Africans have been charging at the banners that are held by the European, the matador. These banners have been represented by concepts such as democracy, capitalism, Marxism, religion, and education. The banners remain constant as long as Africans are assets. However, with technology and worldwide industrialization on a rampage resulting in further exploitation of Africa's resources, which in turn produces an increase in Africa's national consciousness, Africans are now treated as a liability to the Caucasian, culture. Therefore, the banner held by the matador represents only one concept, genocide. As a consequence, the major research that Caucasian scientists are involved in today is genocidal in nature. Nuclear warfare, population control, medication control, genetic engineering, psychosurgery, electrical stimulation of the brain, and the highly complex science of behavioral technology. He didn't mention AIDS, did he? Because this is, when he wrote this, was before 1980. AIDS became big around that time, and he died in 1982. Yes, right, brothers and sisters, AIDS, acquired immune deficiency syndrome, and HIV, immunodeficiency virus, were developed by Europeans. They were developed in a laboratory in Fort Detrick, Maryland. It gave the appearance that it was a homosexual disease. And then it gave the appearance that it was an African green monkey, and Africans were eating these green monkeys. And no, it was developed. Look at the movie Outbreak, Mutaba, or Ebola. Ebola. In the movie Outbreak, the disease is called Mutaba, and how it was developed. Check that movie out. It's about 20-something years old with Cuba Gooding Jr. and Dustin Hoffman. The highly complex science of behavioral technology, indeed, it is our moment of truth. It is time for us to look at the matador. And I want us to understand, and at least my feeling for Bobby Wright and what he is saying to us, is to look at him for who and what he is. Not that we can do anything to change them, but we must change ourselves. We must change our attitude, our mindset. That's what's important. Because they suffer from cognitive dissonance. They believe they're superior. They believe they have the divine right to do what they are doing. And these are the most selfish, greedy son of a on the planet. So there's nothing we can do. But once we look at the matador for who and what he is, now we can close ranks, come together, and begin to do for ourselves. Kick everybody out of the continent and control the resources and the land for ourselves. This presentation is based upon the following very simple premise. In their relationship with us, Europeans are psychopaths, and their behavior reflects an underlying biological transmitted precultivity with deep roots in their evolutionary history. That's deep. In their evolutionary history. How did they develop? What did Sheikh Anta Jop say? You had the northern cradle and the southern cradle. Look up Jop, D-I-O-P, Sheikh Anta Jop. And it's two cradle theory. The psychopath is an individual who is constantly in conflict with other groups or persons. He is unable to experience guilt, is completely selfish and callous, and has a total disregard for the rights of others. This premise is supported by overwhelming scientific evidence. Martin R. Delaney in 68, Du Bois in 1868, and Du Bois in 1896, Fanon in 63, Garvey, Marshall Chris Garvey, another book he wrote, and of course Francis Cress Welsing and Chancellor Williams in 71. There is a scientific dictum which states everything that exists exists in some amount, and if it exists, it can be measured. One of the best methods that can be used to measure the psychopath's traits of the Caucasian culture is observing and analyzing their universal overt behaviors and attitudes towards Africans. However, in so doing, since Africans have been enslaved and colonized by Caucasians, a very subtle psychological problem is posed, of which every African should be aware. Intellectual insight about Caucasians does not ensure that there will be a corresponding change in our behavior and attitudes toward Caucasians, particularly when there is a threat involved. And there is a threat involved. For example, everywhere one finds Caucasians and us in close proximity to each other, whether it is Chicago, Zimbabwe, Caucasians are in control. It doesn't matter, even to this day. Brothers and sisters, he wrote this in the late 70s. Yet Africans rarely question this extraordinary universal phenomenon, which defies every known statistical law of probability. It does. It defies every law. Wherever we are, on the continent, throughout, they're in a position of dominance and control, and we are in a subservient position. For example, whenever one finds yet Africans rarely question this extraordinary phenomenon, which defies all laws of probability. In fact, Africans denounce those who simply raise the question with admonitions such as, "We should not be racist and treat them as they have treated us." In fact, Caucasians are not going to allow us to treat them as they treated us. So that requires no discussion. And you're right. I just saw the other day where the UK told Ethiopia, "No, we're not going to give you back this crown. We'll loan it to you." Do you understand if the car, if we had something that they had in our possession and they wanted, they would get it back. But the humane people that we are, we wouldn't have stole it from Jump Street and we would give it back. But not them. It is not who they are. Wherever they are, it is not who they are. However, the subject of African racism should be discussed. A functional definition of racism could be the oppression and exploitation of people because of their race. Using this definition, it is very clear at this point in time, we cannot be racist because of our lack of power to oppress anybody. Let me, sorry about that. We cannot be racist because of our inability to oppress anybody. Using this definition, it is very clear that at this point in time, Africans cannot be racist because of our lack of power to oppress anybody. Caucasians, Indians from India, Chinese, whoever. African intellectual enlightenment does not always lead to genuine insight and can be very damaging to the intellect, as reflected by the behavior and attitudes of many eminent African scientists. For example, Dr. Kenneth Clark, that's the one who did the study, the Black Dog, White Dog study, has spent his life making a fortune playing the victim of white supremacy and white oppression, his own people, and now speaks of the irrelevance of color. Dr. Alvin Poussin, who seems to be Johnson Publishing Company's psychiatrist in residence, ignores the worldwide genocidal programs directed against us and writes such trivia as the difference between sex and love, blacks and Jews, an appeal for unity, and why blacks kill blacks. Blacks kill blacks because they've never been trained to kill whites. Blacks kill blacks because they've never been trained to kill whites. Therefore, it's outside of their experiences. Historically, European system has encouraged the killing of us because us have been led to believe that they are part of the psychopath system, because we have been led to believe we are part of their system. They simply follow, and we simply follow the practice. Dr. James Comers, another American African psychiatrist whom the psychopath has so overwhelmed that he has been moved, as his book suggests, beyond black and white. Cobbs and Greer follow this tradition of Africans studying themselves rather than their oppressor by concluding in Black Rage that whites make blacks so mad that they kill themselves. Black scientists generally rationalize their investigations as proof of Caucasian scientists that Africans can be scientifically objective. On the subject of objectivity in science, this author agrees with Dr. Jacob Carruthers Babajetty, who in his brilliant essay, Science and Oppression, states that science is not objective, nor is it neutral. An African scientist who moves outside of the psychopath's approved course of study takes the chance of being labeled unscientific, emotional, and biased, etc. Additionally, funds are only available to African scientists who support the approved course of study themselves. Many very competent students who are naive about Caucasian scientific inquiry are flunked out of schools because of their insistence on studying the ethology of African problems, the psychopaths, because they are our problem, the psychopath, them, rather than the effect. African students must be taught that Caucasian educational institutions are the matador's cape that protects Caucasians from African scientific inquiry, which would expose the unthinkable depth of their psychopathology. In order to understand the psychopath's personality, one must differentiate between three classifications: the neurotic, the psychotic, and the psychopath. The definitions of pathology have been established and adhered to by the World Health Organization's International Classification of Diseases. The contributions of African people to determine these classifications are almost non-existent. That's right, we don't determine anything. Caucasians do everything. They are the definition makers. They define what it is. Generally, the neurotic is a person who suffers a great deal or over problems that are handled fairly routinely by well-adjusted personalities. The major problem for neurotics is their inordinate amount of anxiety. However, in contrast to the psychopath, the neurotic has very good reality contact. The psychopath, in addition to being out of touch with reality, has severe malfunctioning and many times has to be hospitalized for long periods of time. This leaves the psychopath. Science agreed there is no science without classification. For the disciplines of psychology and medicine, it is not necessary for labels and diagnosis to have concrete reality. They can be retained if they are useful in understanding and treating disease. For example, the majority of patients who are admitted or committed to mental hospitals in this country are diagnosed as being schizophrenic. Although there is no general agreement among psychiatrists and psychologists on the definition of schizophrenia. However, even though it is not required, this presentation does have concrete reality, namely European behavior and attitudes towards Africans. Behavioral scientists generally agree that the outstanding characteristics of the psychopath personality are the most complete absence of ethical or moral development and almost total disregard for appropriate patterns of behavior. This characteristic has led to a misunderstanding of the psychopath as someone who does not know the difference between right and wrong. This belief is not true. Psychopaths simply ignore the concept of right and wrong. They know what the hell they're doing. They just ignore the concept. By ignoring this trait in the Caucasians, the lack of ethical and moral development, Africans have made and are still making a tragic mistake in basing the worldwide liberation movement on moral persuasion. It is a pathological for Africans to keep attempting to use moral persuasion on a people who have no moral. They are amoral when race is the variable, when culture is the variable. Because of their lack of ethical and moral development, there is no conflict between Caucasians' religion and racial oppression. There is no conflict. The Caucasian culture has historically oppressed, exploited, and killed African people, all in the name of their God, Jesus Christ, and with the sanction of their churches. It is generally overlooked that the Ku Klux Klan is primarily a religious organization. Further, Africans should never forget the image of Pope blessing the Italian planes and pilots on their way to bombing Ethiopian men, women, and children with only spears to defend themselves. This behavior is not surprisingly, since Caucasians use scripture to justify their treatment of Africans. According to the book of Genesis, Noah placed a curse on his son Ham, forever dooming all of his descendants to be the servants of the servants of God. Naturally, Caucasians interpret Africans as the descendants of Ham and then themselves as the servants of God. In one of the following interpretations, it's interesting, All right. I appreciate those who are listening out there. God bless you. I appreciate it. If Ham was black and Noah was his father, now Noah was black and only allowed animals on the ark, since whites deny that blacks and whites sprung from the same source, a position that this writer also agrees with, then we know from an impeccable source how whites got on the boat. Unlike other extreme pathological syndromes, only a very small percentage of psychopaths are committed to mental hospitals, with another small percentage ending up in penal institutions. The majority of psychopaths function very well in society. They are generally average or above average in intelligence, have engaging personalities. In addition, they are usually very impressive and competent with no feelings of insecurities, anxieties, or any other manifestations or psychoneurosis. They appear to be very honest and human, but really have no concern or commitment except to their own selfish, greedy interests. Psychopaths would consistently make comments that they have no intentions of keeping or showing great indignation or anger when their dignity is questioned. Africans in the U.S. learned this lesson very well during the civil rights confrontation of the 60s. The Caucasian sheriffs, judges showed their greatest hostility when we began to quote the law to them. This behavior can be clearly seen in Caucasians' attitude towards African liberation. Whites, liberals give lip service to African liberation while arguing that blacks are going too fast. White conservatives think blacks have too much already. The psychopath is usually sexually inadequate with a very limited capability to form close interpersonal relationships. The European sexual inadequacy psychologically explains the constant objectification projection of Africans as super sexual beings and lacking any sexual inhibitions. Yet Europeans streak, mate swap, participate in orgies, homosexual, all of this, all of that. That is them. It is not us. all of their sexual behavior. And see, that's why you think today, when you see today, we are perceived as over-sex. It is not us. All of their sexual behavior is a desperate attempt to achieve meaningful relationships with constantly, due to their psychopathic makeup, elude them. Caucasian sexual dysfunction has produced tragic consequences in our community. They have attempted to achieve sexual gratification by such methods as raping our women. Their rationale is that our women are oversexed and invite their attention. Historically, the justification of castrating our men was their animal passions had to be contained. In 1893, Frank Liston of Chicago, a Caucasian doctor, posed that castration will help conserve the energy of our community. The sustained sexual atrocities committed against us by Caucasians have no parallel in history. There is no scientific explanation except under the rubric of psychopathology. Psychopaths' inability to accept blame or learn from previous experience can easily be proven. They never accept blame for our environment conditions, which they are clearly a result of their oppression. On the contrary, we are held susceptible and responsible for the deterioration of the community, even though all of the property is owned by them, is owned and controlled by them. In addition, municipal services are withdrawn from our community, and most of their communities have been used up before we are allowed to move into them. In fields of mental health and drug abuse, Caucasians are at their psychopathic best. The United States government's position on drug users is that addicts are cured when they cease antisocial behavior, regardless of how long they have been maintained on methadone or other drugs. Dr. Jefferson Jay and Edward Sine, the czars of the U.S. drug program, with the assistance and protection of black addicts and ex-addicts, have created one of the most destructive programs in our community, the methadone maintenance program. The United States government is the largest supplier of drugs to addicts in our community. Sine takes the position that African addicts should not be given placebos or just plain orange juice. If sexually frustrated suburban housewives can be given sugar pills rather than real drugs, why can't African-American addicts be given orange juice without the methadone, since they cannot tell the difference? Sine states that giving our people, our addicts, pure orange juice without methadone is unethical. Therefore, it can be deduced that doctors such as Sine believe that it is honorable act to give us drugs. Community mental health centers are in such disarray that the space does not permit an adequate discussion. They are underfunded and therefore understaffed, with the usual staffing consisting primarily of all Caucasian professionals and all low-paid professionals, Additionally, almost every existing center uses the medical model, i.e., the belief that the majority problem in our community, without any regard to the circumstances or environment, that we are the problem. Belief that the major problem is us, the black person, without any regard. Are heavily influenced by the American Medical Association, which is one of the most overtly racist and probably the most powerful organization in the United States. A very vicious funding game is played by black mental health centers, in which the United States government supplies funds, with the stipulation being that African communities must find matching funds. Needless to say, there are usually no matching funds for black mental health institutes and programs. Therefore, the funds revert back to the federal government. Psychopaths also reject constituted authority and discipline. The presence of this trait in the Caucasians has grave implications for us who seek logical solutions to their problems. They especially applies to us in the United States, who are the world's only legally created group, created through the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, which can be repealed at any moment by Congress or declared unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. As long as this condition exists, black people in the United States will always be legally 5 minutes away from slavery. And of course, we know that the 15th Amendment, if you have created a crime or committed a crime, you can be, and that's what mass incarceration is all about. For us in the United States to place their destiny in the hands of the Supreme Court justice is an extreme form of psychological blindness and a pathological rejection of history. The Supreme Court of the United States has always used the prevailing white political climate as a criteria for dealing with the question of race. For example, as a result of the infamous 1954 school desegregation decision, blacks have lost an estimated 35,000 teaching and administrative positions in the South. Former black principals of schools are now janitors in integrated schools, and the same thing is going on to happen in the North. Eventually, the Supreme Court is going to find the 1954 decision unconstitutional, but by that time, whites would have taken over all black schools, including black colleges. I was watching the thing with in the MEAC and black. It was, although it was bowling, but still, it was... One or two sisters in a bowling team, I think I had 6-8 players, only one or two sisters, everybody else is Caucasian for Jackson State, you know, Texas Southern. Wow. The psychopath behavior of Supreme Court justice is consistent with that of other Caucasian professionals, lawyers, doctors, judges, politicians. They consistently take advantage of us without any guilt, anxiety, or threat to their self-esteem. For example, in the black community, white doctors are the largest group of drug pushers. They prescribe unneeded and dangerous drugs and perform unnecessary operations. Caucasian scientists use Africans in every destructive studies, such as the Tuskegee experiment, in which black men were denied treatment for syphilis and evidence suggests were deliberately infected. The role that the white scientists have played in black oppression should not be surprising to blacks because whites have historically been the planners of black oppression, and as a rule, they never ask why, but only how. This behavior of Caucasian scholars such as Jensen and Shockley are examples of intelligence in the service of racist institutions or psychopathic behavior. Jensen and Shockley were simply following the pathologic and pathetic tradition of Hegel, Carlyle, Galton, etc., that has continued for hundreds of years. History is replete with examples of white scientists professing the inferiority of the black race. The eminent Dr. Samuel Cartwright of Louisiana diagnosed blacks who ran away from slavery as having a disease of the mind. He was running away from slavery, so you must have a disease of the mind. Dr. Robert Bean of Johns Hopkins University posed that blacks had smaller brains than whites, and since brain efficiency depending upon the number and positions of nerve cells and fibers in the brain, blacks had less capacity for development than whites. Dr. Carl Jungs, one of the white giants of psychology, stated that white Americans' sexual inadequacy was due to their having to live together with a barbaric race, the blacks. The whites used a scientific justification for racial oppression can be found in even in the most inadequate library. What makes Caucasian scientists such as Shockley and Jensen so dangerous to the black community today is that not only do they present so-called scientific proof of the threat, but they also offer solutions. With the present level of technology available to them, this should not be taken lightly. However, it is self-defeating and useless for black scientists to debate the question of race via the mass media with white scientists such as Shockley and Jensen. White scientists simply want to expose their ideas. Additionally, it is pathological for blacks to discuss with whites the question of whether or not we should exist. For all other people, simply raising a question about their existence is tantamount to a declaration of war. This then is a psychopathic personality of the matador. The one constant in an ever-changing world is the behavior of the white race in their relationship to blacks. This is a very challenging problem. An inevitable question is, what should we do? One dilemma posed for African people is the constant appeal for liberation through channels created for them by the psychopath, namely democracy and communism. A cursory examine of both systems immediately points out the futility of blacks giving them any more consideration. Blacks must accept the reality that for the Caucasian, democracy and racial oppression are not conflicting ideas. The fact that we have been enslaved for over 350 years, damn near 400 years next year, y'all. 400 years here by a democratic form of government should be evident enough. Furthermore, a democratic government presumes inherent equality of races. It does not provide methods of liberation for those who are not equal. Communism can be dismissed as an alternative with even more or less discussion. For communism to be viable requires cooperation of the masses, of the white people. With that as a primary condition, communism needs no further discussion either, because we'll never cooperate with us. However, since Africans have been finally rejected, democracy has an alternative by attempting to burn down its bastion, the United States. There are signs that it is now time for the Marxists to try to contain them. Throughout Africa, Marxists has enlisted black heads of state as allies. These black leaders go to great lengths to deny that our struggle is racial. Yet the only true independent nations on the African continent are those headed by Caucasian invaders, South Africa being one, which is still controlled by Caucasians. One of the biggest tragedies in the relationship between blacks and Arabs, for blacks to accept Arabs as anything but white invaders, is a pathological denial of reality and history. In the oil crises, the slave traders from the north treated black Africans worse than they treated some European nations. This behavior is consistent for Caucasian psychopaths. No white nation in the world encourages black immigration, but there is a great effort throughout the world to integrate Africa. Again, the question of what do we do? There is no evidence that blacks and whites can live in close proximity to each other in peace without whites attempting to oppress and exterminate us. In fact, there is overwhelming evidence that even Caucasian ethnic groups cannot live together. Irish, English, Greeks and Turks, Arabs and Jews. Behavioral scientists generally agree that there is no known cure for the psychopath. Behavioral scientists generally agree there is no known cure for the psychopath. In fact, it is widely held belief that the only successful treatment for the psychopath is incarceration, radical psychosurgery, or death. Therefore, since blacks are at war with psychopaths, violence is the only way. Brother Lerone Bennett proposed in his brilliant essay entitled Time, Space, and Revolution that it is hard to tell time by a revolutionary clock. Likewise, it is difficult to tell direction by a revolutionary compass. Unfortunately, with the terrain and the instrument has distorted blacks and resulted in various inadequate and dangerous behavioral patterns. Some have become catatonic and do not move at all, but wait for divine intervention, while others place their faith and energies in charismatic guides who are just as lost as they are. These blacks seem to ignore Brother Lerone Bennett's depressing, truthful warning that history does not forgive those who lose their way. Still, others fantasize that blacks have reached their destination and attempt to act accordingly as free men. Some persevere and pursue old beaten paths that inevitably lead back to the starting point. But there are others whose minds have moved past the psychopath's imposed boundaries, and they have begun to blaze new paths toward Africa's rendezvous with destiny. So it was with Chaka in the 1700s, Dessalines in the 1800s, Martin R. Delaney in 1852, Henry McNeil Turner in 1880, Marcus Garvey in the 1920s, Malcolm X and H.R.H. Bound in the 1960s, and Chancellor Williams in the 1970s. The answer to blacks' problems can be found in the works and lives of these great heroes. They all looked at the matador or the psychopath for who and what he is and moved against him. The struggle must continue, and we will conquer without a doubt. The words of Dr. Bobby Wright. Brothers and sisters, we're going to take a break here. When we come back from that break, we'll take some calls. You're listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com.
leaving all the dreams inside of you. Don't stop achieving, yeah. Let some love shine on through. And don't fight the feeling, just keep on dealing. Everybody keep on moving, 'cause I know we can get it over. So baby,
give it all you got.
Let's keep rising to the top.
Give it all you got.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. We are paying tribute to a true warrior scholar and psychiatrist and psychologist and all of that dealing with the African mind. And that is the eminent Dr. Bobby Wright. To me, not given nearly enough exposure and credit. And his untimely death, he wasn't even 50 years old by the time he passed in 1982. Like I said, that was something that has stuck with me, the opportunity to hear him, to see him in 1980 in Milwaukee. And it stuck with me. And I listened to this psychopathic racial personality on tape and read it a number of times. And in fact, I had all my books stored. And so I went and got this from the bookstore here. It's less than $10, brothers and sisters. If you have a bookstore in your neighborhood, go pick up the Psychopathic Racial Personality. We have a caller. Okay. I'm going to take this caller. Good afternoon, caller. 646.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, Uncle?
Hey, Brother Jay, how are you today?
Good. I'm good. You know, Bobby Wright was a heavy brother, man. It's just unfortunate. I think he only really wrote one book, right?
No, he wrote a few other books, but he more so, these are small essays. I think two other books that he wrote.
Small essays.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah. But you know, the crazy thing that I always think about and wonder is, why haven't we produced more brothers like Amos Wilson and Bobby Wright, you know, and Sister Wellesley, that has done you know, defining works and been able, because there may have been some who have done defining works, but just haven't gotten the notoriety.
Sure, sure.
And then there have been those who have done defining works, and then because of certain behaviors have, in a sense, been not cast aside from the community, but just haven't been brought into the community like they used to, a.k.a. Naeem Akbar.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when it started going around that he may be a monkey man.
Well, let me just say this. I think that no matter what anybody's sexual orientation is, as long as it's not being imposed on anybody, but what work do you produce? And I think the work that he produced, Wade Nobles, Francis right. Cress, all of them, you know, Joy DeGruy, all of them have produced work that clearly says to us that we're dealing with a people that we cannot use moral persuasion on. We're dealing with the people who don't want to hear a damn thing that we got to say about what they have done to us and continue to do to us. And but yet they have trained us to continue to rely on them, to continue to come to them for our education, for all our social and physical and political needs. You see, it is a messed up situation. It is like acceptance, rejection. You see, and so as a consequence, our minds are so messed up that a lot of us don't have a damn clue. We don't know what the hell is going on. In fact, I used to be the same. What's up, man? What's happening? Because we don't know.
It just seems as though, you know, something that a brother friend of mine always talks about, they got us on remote control.
Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunate that, you know, a people at this stage of the game hasn't evolved into the type of production and separation that we necessarily need to honestly survive. Because I don't see us, you know, flourishing with this Yorugal.
Of course not.
Hold on one second, OT.
Okay, well, I'm gonna let you go. I'm gonna continue to put. In fact, I want to play this. I want to play this other piece by Dr. Bobby Wright. Religion has always been counter to revolution. Dr. Bobby Wright, one of our great ancestors.
This one might be stopped soon. But anyway, now, let me just finish up. Okay. I have some recommendations. I didn't get a chance to get to religion because I know I'm down in the Bible Belt. I grew up down here. This is the Bible Belt, you see. Harold spoke to it. You see, you have to make a distinction between religion and spirituality. What they have us is in religion. And it's a very fundamental question I'm asking you then. If all of us agree that white people didn't give us good food, they didn't give us good clothing, they didn't give us good houses, why did they give us such good religion? I mean, have y'all started thinking about that? Why did they give us such good religion? Give me the old time religion. See, let me tell you something you might not understand. Religion has always been counter-revolutionary. Religion has always been counter-revolutionary. In fact, if you stop to think about it, what religion does is the same thing you're supposed to do, get you to adjust to this life on earth. Because, look, in suffering, there is what? Redemption. Out of suffering, there comes redemption. So what if you don't have food in your house? So what if you don't have heat? This is just a small hotel room you're passing on through. To eternity. You understand? I mean, that's religion. That's why religion never leads to revolution. Unless you have your own indigenous religion. Unless you have your own. So where they gave it to us because it pacified us. And it still does. And that is why we're the only people where every time you see somebody speaking, it's a preacher. A preacher. You never hear rabbis. You never hear priests leading the white folks. Always leading us, Reverend Andrew Young. Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. No. I was with King. I know King, though. Let me give you the final example of that because I know I'm down in King's hometown. And we could never get nothing going in Atlanta. Look, nothing could ever get going in this city. This was the hardest damn city in the world, even to make black folks aware that was a struggle. right. This is the end of it, because we only have 5 minutes. This is the end of it. But we must realize is that, I know y'all can see that, but I'm just going to do it briefly. Political, economic, military, educational, it's one more, religious. Maybe enough. Okay. What we do not understand here is this is a social theory. It has to take in account all of these institutions. You must have a political institution, you must have an economic institution, you must have a military institution, you must have an educational, and you must have a religion. And the only time you can have revolution, that's why this country's never been close to revolution. The only time you can have revolution is that these institutions come in conflict. That's what happened in Iran. In Iran, the religion and the educational institutions came in conflict with the military and the political. That's what happened in Iran. Otherwise, it never would have been a revolution. That's another reason I tell you how dangerous education is, contrary to what you all believe, how dangerous colleges are. Every time there is a revolution, the first thing they close down are the universities. The first thing you close down is university. That's your most dangerous institution. People get into them and think. Unfortunately, if we had a revolution, the first thing they would offer would be our black school. See, that'd be the first thing they offer. Now, let me just give you this, what we should be about. Now, this is sort of out of context, but I'm going to push this. I'll tell you why I'm going to push this. I have two ads here. And these ads are taken from Ebony. One is black and white bleaching cream. At last, you can have shades lighter, smoother, softer skin with safe, scientific black and white bleaching cream that is not one, not two, but now 3 times stronger than before. They get lighter. Get 3 shades lighter, smoother, softer. Now, Nat Danola bleaching cream is double strength, lightens skin even faster. Now, let me tell you something. Have you ever stopped to think that you have never seen an ad that said darken your skin? Have you ever thought about that? Never have you seen in your life an ad to say, this skin is 3 times stronger. This cream is 3 times stronger. It darkens the skin. Not that it wouldn't be bankrupt in a week, but at least we should be able to see one. Okay? Now, on what we should do. Here are my recommendations. One, first recommendation I'm making is up to the people from this point on. We must place the interests of our race above all other interests, above all other considerations. That's the first one. In anything we do and think, we should first ask a simple question. Does it help or does it hurt the race? That's number one. Place the interests of our race. Two, we should begin to sanction and punish those blacks who operate against our interests. Right. Begin to sanction them and punish them. Three, that we should sanction completely and refuse to support those blacks who marry and cohabit with whites or members of other races. Yes. All right? Now, I'm talking about we should immediately begin to boycott from this day on Dinah Silverstein, who you all call Dinah Ross, O.J. Simpson, Leslie Uggams, Bill Russell, Sidney Poitier, Harry Belafonte, and we should really put on a type of probation. I haven't worked this one out yet. People such as Diane Carroll, Lena Horne, Red Fox, Sammy Davis Jr., and I'm saying to you, now you all might think this is revolutionary. This is not. This is really not. It's just that it's got to be articulated. Now, y'all do with it what you want to. Four, here's one going to lose a lot of people. Okay. We should make a conscious effort to darken the race. We should begin to make a conscious effort to darken the race. By accepting skin color as a criterion of adoption, we adopt children. Give that black child equal chance. Please. The black, you'd be surprised, you go into these agencies, see all these little black kids, nobody wants. I'm not real black. No question on what they are. Nobody wants them. All right. Also, when you begin to look for a lover or a mate, look, don't reject the sister or the brother because they're dark. You know, in 1980, we got to be talking like this, but yeah, okay. Five. No black can be considered a leader or hold a leadership position who marries outside the race.
That's right.
No black. Six. We must stop using black in negative terms. We got to stop doing that. Stop using that and don't. We must stop using the word nigger, Tom, and all that. You know, if you look at the image of Uncle Tom, it's an old black man with gray hair. The image of Aunt Jemima is an old black woman with a bandana on her head. Our grandmothers know. That's the image they gave us of Aunt Jemima. Now, we must begin, number seven, we must begin to consciously expose our children to positive black images, and those of us who are professionals must begin to spend some time in at least independent schools after school on Saturdays and Sundays with our black children. We must begin to show them positive images. Number eight, we also must have artists. We must begin to develop artists like this who show strong black images and things like that. One of the things that we're running into in terms of the religion, and I don't care what you say, you have to believe God is white. Every picture you've ever seen of God, he's white. Unless you've been at the Institute of the Black Madonna, down at the Black Madonna. And you probably think, I ain't gonna tell you what you think about that, but everybody thinks. I remember even in our church when the fans had Jesus pictures on him. So if you get, subliminal suggestion, you get one, and that white Jesus just flashing in front of your head, I'm going to end by reading something to you, especially to you as black students, because I really love you very much. I really do. I love you very much. And I just have so much faith in you. I really do. I have so much faith in you because in you I see me. And the mere fact that, that I don't think that we're any different than anyone else. I just think we'll rise above our problems. This is the poem, and they turned it into a song. And I want you to listen to it carefully. To be young, gifted, and black. Oh, what a lovely, precious dream. To be young, gifted, and black. Open your heart to what I mean. In the whole world, there are a million boys and girls who are young, gifted, and black. And that's a fact. You are young, gifted, and black. We must begin to tell our young. There's a world waiting for you. You will end up where the world began. So when you're feeling real low, there's a truth you should know. To be young, gifted, and black, that's where it at. To be young, gifted, and black, oh, how I love to know the truth. There's a world without a fact. There's a world without a fact, and I'm hunted by my youth. But my joy of today is that we all will be proud to say, to be young, gifted, and black, and that's a fact. Alusha continue, Nasima Tachinda Bablishika. Sante Sana.
The words of our great ancestor, Dr. Bobby Wright, who loved us like I love us, and who is willing to say and do whatever it takes to help move our people to our destiny. And our destiny, and excuse me, when Dr. King said he'd been on the mountaintop and seen, what is our end game? Our end game, our destiny is to be a sovereign people. And any and everything that works towards that, that's what Dr. Bobby Wright was talking about. And of course, to make that a reality in our future, we must deal with our children. And if you look at our children today, it doesn't give much hope, I know, particularly because of the materialism, the individual, just like you talked about when free will, when you're given free will, you think you can just do what you want to do. He made a point in another presentation I was listening to him the other day. Dr. Bobby Wright said that other groups can't just do to their people what we do to us and get away with it. But we're allowed to get away because it is encouraged. It is pushed on us to hate ourselves. It is pushed on us to disrespect one another, disrespect our women, disrespect our elders, disrespect our ancestors. It is pushed on us to hate us to such degree that we're willing to kill one another at the drop of a hat or for a hat, or if your hat is turned the wrong damn way. Our children. We need our children. The black child, a destiny in jeopardy. One of the most tragic beliefs widely shared by blacks throughout the world is that white controlled educational institutions, regardless of whether they are elementary schools or universities, will educate our children. Faith continues to prevail in spite of overwhelming evidence which disputes this belief. Blacks continue to ignore the irrefutable truth that in a racist social system, all institutions will reflect, protect, and sustain values that are consistent with racism. This should not be considered surprising or profound, since all institutions serve to perpetuate the social theory of the group which created them. Therefore, any social system established by Caucasians, the institutes will reflect racism. Likewise, white established institutions in black controlled countries will continue to protect the welfare of whites, even after whites have left. For example, blacks in Zimbabwe accepted a constitution which gave a 4% white minority control of the judicial, military, and economic institutions in return for their agreeing to stay in the country. They also accepted as the leaders of the Caucasians a former prime minister of the country, Ian Smith, who was responsible for tens of thousands of deaths of our people and our suffering. Furthermore, even the Patriotic Front, an indigenous liberation force, accepted the conditions that Britain would write the constitution for Zimbabwe. The behavior of Brother Mugabe of the Patriotic Front, a self-proclaimed Marxist, and of the Brother Musuye, a collaborist and Christian minister, reinforces the concept that whites' institutions always prepare blacks to protect white interests regardless of their political ideology. This is consistent with the theory of Neely Fuller, author of the United Independent Compensatory Code System concept, as explained in the ISIS papers by Dr. Francis Cress Welsing in 1991. Fuller goes further to develop the concept that racism is not merely a pattern of individual or institutional practices, that is indeed a universally operating system of white supremacy ruled and dominated in which the effective majority of the world's white people participate. The majority of the people on this planet who are white participate in this system. He discounts an invalid theory which states that the evolution of economic systems has necessitated or produced this state of affairs. Instead, he turns such theories upside down by suggesting that various economic systems such as capitalism, communism, socialism have been devised, used, and refined in the effort to achieve the primary goal of white domination. In other words, the goal of the system of white supremacy is not for anything other than the establishment, maintenance, expansion, and refinement of world domination by members of the group which classifies itself as the white race. What does the above discussion have to do with education of the black child? Everything. Education is a political dynamic, and for people who have no social theory, reading, writing, and arithmetic should be much less important than what is written and read. Therefore, in order to liberate the minds of our children, a black social theory must be developed. Let me say that again. In order to liberate the minds of our children, a social theory must be developed. There is an African proverb which warns the traveler of life that if you don't know where you're going, then any road will get you there. Blacks throughout the world don't know where they are going and have resolved to just take any road. What does it matter? A social theory determines the destiny of a people by establishing guidelines of life. It defines their relationship with other living things. It defines values and rituals, methods of education, how enemies are to be dealt with, etc. The ultimate achievement of a black social or African social theory would be the creation of African culture. The eminent African scientist, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, in 1976, succinctly placed culture in its proper perspective by stating the following: I consider culture as a rampart which protects a people collectively. Culture must, above all, play a protective role. It must ensure the cohesion of the group. Following this line of thinking, the various functions of a body of African human science is to develop this science of collective belonging through the reinforcement of culture. This can be done by developing the linguistic factors, by reestablishing the historical consciousness of African and African people has so to arrive at a common feeling of belonging to the same culture and historical past. Once this is attained, it will become difficult to divide and rule us and to oppose African communities one against the other. Black children can be educated only after blacks develop a philosophy of education, which must be contained in black social theory. There is no alternative to this dictum, and without it, even black independent schools will fail to reach their full potential. It should be clear that black independent schools can exist by themselves, but will be limited in what they can't accomplish as long as there is an absence of other black institutions, i.e. economic, military, religious, etc. Therefore, rather than exist in a vacuum, their values and purposes must be consistent with the ideas that are contained in a social theory. One of the most valid methods of evaluating the condition or status of a people is to examine the process of their child-rearing practices. The black child today, whether the United States, Africa, South America, the Caribbean, or wherever, stands as a tragic example of a powerless, directionless people. Therefore, throughout the animal kingdom, there is generally an inviolated law which dictates that the younger are to be protected at all costs. Throughout the animal kingdom, there is generally an invalidated law which dictates that the young are to be protected at all costs, because that is our future. Yet in our community, not only are children not protected, but in many cases we offer them up as sacrificial lambs to a devouring enemy. Therefore, one continues to witness the sorry spectacle of black parents delivering their children to an overt and covert hostile white enemy with a pathological demand that they educate them. There is very little that explains this type of mass human behavior except menticide, a concept which entails the deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind with the ultimate purpose of the extermination of that group. In the United States, blacks operate under another dangerous menticidal assumption. Many believe that there is value in an integrated educational environment, thereby accepting the fatal implications that education is objective and neutral. Blacks' persistence in this behavior, despite the fact that there is no scientific and significant evidence which shows positive educational achievements in a setting such as opposed to segregated educational systems and experiences. In Chicago, the black leadership is demanding that a school system comprised of a ratio of 80% children of color vis-a-vis 20% white children be integrated at all costs. Furthermore, they proclaim a victory when the black administration of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare refused federal funds to the Chicago School Board and referred the case to the Department of Justice. Black leaders and parents are so obsessed with the concept of a closer we get to whites, the whiter we will get syndrome, that they are willing to pay any price, including the destruction of our children's minds. They totally ignore the fact that since 1954, we have been completely lost all control, regardless of how minimal, over our children's education. In the South, under the disguise of integration, thousands of African teachers and administrators, or formerly all black schools, were replaced with whites and now unemployed. In Chicago, the black leadership accepted a plan whereby the teaching and administrative force would remain at 65% white and 35% other. In other words, throughout this nation, when blacks speak of integrating schools, they do not show any concern over who teaches their children. In fact, blacks take the general position of, we don't care what color the teachers are as long as they are qualified. Yet, if blacks' parents are asked, what are the qualifications for teaching? They couldn't tell you. However, the behavioral attitude of blacks' educators is more tragic. Even all those educators observed and experienced in their own personal economic destruction and destruction of the minds of their children, they all still exhort the virtues of the integrated education. Dr. Chancellor Williams, in his incomparable work, The Destruction of Black Civilization, thoroughly analyzed the black educator. These Negroes who are so frantically fighting to escape from African race by way of integration and amalgamation will continue to meet everlasting and universal opposition from Caucasians. The Negro drive to be white in every situation is equal by determination to prevent it. The Negro drive to be white in every situation is equaled by the determination to prevent it. Yet the whites must truly feel a sense of pride seeing this Negro leadership so clearly validating their own beliefs in white supremacy. Their pretended quality education objective actually collapses under the wheels of busing for racial balance. They are proclaiming to all the world that regardless of general desegregation in any and all black or predominantly black population, the blacks themselves are utterly incapable of achieving or maintaining high standards of excellence in education or indeed anything else. here we have within the race, the intolerable situation of an anti-black group proclaiming that race inherent inferiority more effectively than the whites ever could, precisely because this group is regarded as black. Clearly, I'm not suggesting that whites are omnipotent. On the contrary, history tells us that they will be had. However, it will not be done by blacks engaging in mythological denial or escapism, but only by our actively and consciously participating in the destruction of racism, which means the destruction of white civilization. We must accept the indisputable fact that racism and Western civilization are synonymous events, and as long as the song says, you can't have one without the other. We must be about the business of liberating the minds of black children. Let me say this again. We must be about the business of liberating the minds of black children. In order for that to occur, the minds of all blacks who interact with them must be liberated. There is no other way. It is relatively easy to educate black children, even about their Afrocentricity. But it is extremely difficult to reinforce the education. Therefore, even sitting in the same classroom, white children will be educated and black children will be trained. The white child will be taught how to rule and the black child trained to be ruled. Training is defined as teaching a group what to think rather than how to think, making them dependent rather than assisting in developing skills which could used for independent activity, rewarding the behavior that operates against their group's interests, promoting individual rather than group achievement, and installing negative self-concept and low self-esteem. The opposite of the above mental-cital process, training, is education, in which the training or the learning process comes and becomes a liberating force. Black independent schools are important not only for how they teach, but for what is taught. Their purpose of instilling within the black child an African worldview is the most important activity those children will ever experience. Black parents whose children are not in independent schools should, at a minimum, expose them to well-instructed supplemental educational programs. Some of the most dangerous blacks in the world are some of those brothers and sisters who finished graduate school with honors and yet operate against the interests of us because of their ethnocentric or Eurocentric orientation. Let me say that again. Some of the most dangerous of us in the world are many of those brothers and sisters who finish graduate school with honors and yet operate against the interests of us because of their Eurocentric orientation. The writer does not mean to imply that blacks should not attempt to achieve high levels of training in white institutions, but should be aware that it is not education they are receiving. Furthermore, there is no attempt here to glamorize the street mentality that is so pervasive and prevalent in our community today, and which is creating widespread destruction. One of the most prevailing mental-cital myths in the black community is that street sense is positive. What is really being inferred is that whites do not control the streets in the black community, nor the behavior of blacks on those streets. This is untrue. Whites have more control, or at least as much control, over brothers and sisters in the streets than over those in the universities. Street sense generally prepares blacks to deal with one another in very destructive ways. And when whites wipe out the winner, the population of prisons, drug programs, funeral homes verify this reality. Yet black children, increasing large numbers, are having to choose between two white institutions, the public schools and the public streets. Both will lead to destruction. The solution to our problem is the development of a black social theory, which will lead to the salvation of our children's minds. We must accept the fact that all activities are political, and whatever they operate for or against, our interests will be determined by our developing the ability to realistically assess and control the dynamic relationship between us and our enemies. A black social theory will lead us out of the whiteness of Eurocentric madness into the blackness of African salvation. The struggle will continue. We will conquer without a doubt. The words of Bobby Wright. I tell you, brothers and sisters, I really enjoyed doing this today. I know we only have a few more minutes. If you want to make a comment, please give us a call at 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. Because the spirit of those men and women who I respect and admire for their courage to tell us clearly what it is and what we're up against. That's what I tried to do when I was going to schools back in Milwaukee on my off days as a firefighter. I often said to them, I know what I'm going to say to you. You will not get in these institutions. I was trying to put something on their minds. I was trying to get them to think outside of the imposed boundaries that Europeans have placed them in. Try to get them to understand how important it is for them to release that vice grip that these Caucasians have on our minds. And when you understand that tool, you just not just pull it apart. Not even the strongest can pull it apart. But there's that knob at the end of the handle that you turn. And by turning that knob, I see we have a caller. Good afternoon, caller.
Hey, my brother. How you doing, Bobo Shane?
Hey, it's my co-host on Wednesday. This is Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix Brothers. How you doing today?
Fantastic, man. Your show is fantastic. And it's so fantastic that it kind of depresses me in a sense, because it is the core of our condition. It is the core of our problems. And I recognize that we have less calls coming in, or I think the situation is because it's so sophisticated, this system is so interwoven into the fabric of the American society that many of our people don't understand it.
Right.
And many of them find it the task too daunting of a task to even conceptualize it. So if we were talking right now, for example, about, let's say we were talking about Donald Trump or we was talking about Obama, there'd be so much participation. People
right.
coming and talk.
Right.
But this situation, you see, you don't get lots of calls. It's kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Because people are intimidated by it. But here's the deal, and racism. Okay, I'm not going to compare it to a child, but I'm using an analogy. Let's say you have a child, and you put something on a shelf, and a child keeps reaching for it and grabbing it off the shelf. You pick it up, and you put it higher up on a higher shelf, so the child isn't able to reach it, so you can keep that child in its place, okay?
Mm.
In a sense, racism that way, when they used to use the blatant racism, where that was easy to conceptualize, we could see it. It brought us together, we unified, and we developed kind of strategies against it.
Mm-hmm.
But this system of racism is created by social scientists, educators, historians, propagandists, people with PhDs, and it's a higher level. So we're being programmed subtly, don't even realize it. So our people, for the most part, don't understand this.
Oh, Brother Frank, outstanding. Outstanding. Because as you're saying that, I'm thinking, when we came out of the enslavement, we banded together because we knew we had to, because of how oppressive it was. But then after that period of time, we started wanting to be with the Caucasians and dismiss of what we have. And I read that in that piece, as you heard, on the Black Child. And it kept getting higher and higher, and to the point that we don't understand what the hell is going on or how to deal with this, and we turn inwardly on against each other. Oh, great.
We don't understand. We don't understand. Like when we see the little celebrities on the show and the big houses and it show them to us, those people makes up like less than 2% of our population. But they keep showing them to us, and it creates the illusion that we've arrived, we have equality,
mm-hmm.
when we're still the most exploited group, the most mistreated group.
Mm-hmm.
Until we understand that the white man has created a psychological prison for our mind, a perception management system to control us, we will not be able to break from this.
Right.
And we have to. While I was listening to you speak, oh my God, you were just hitting it. I mean, it was on point. And I was thinking, I realized that lots of people can't grasp it. And that's a situation they can't grasp this prison for their minds. They don't know that it's no coincidence. It is no coincidence that so many black people today are self-loathing, perceive themselves as their own worst enemy, and have faith and perceive white people favorably in spite of a brutal history to the contrary. This mindset that clearly benefits white society is by design.
Yes.
And our people don't recognize this is not some coincidence. When our people say, oh, blacks are hated because of Willie Lynch. No, there's a system in place and we're being socially engineered all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And until we understand the system. So while you were speaking, I was thinking, I guess we have to find a way to simplify, to find a simple language. Even when I was listening to Bobby Wright speaking, because he's so educated, sometimes he's using words, 13-letter words, I think that the average person might not understand. I think the way to get this message out, we have to simplify it.
Right.
Package it in the simplest way so our people would understand. Because it's hard to get a slave to get off his ass if you don't know he's a slave.
That's right.
That's the truth. And that's what they did. They created slaves who don't know they're slaves.
Mm-hmm.
And they've created slaves who are programmed to admire and respect whites and to believe that blacks are their own worst enemy. This programming is all around us, you know?
Yes. Yes.
And when you hear the brother speak, Bobby Wright speaking, you know, when I listen to him and other brothers who went, it saddens me when you hear these brothers who was fighting in the struggle and they've gone, they moved on to the ancestors. And some of our people are still just as brain dead.
That's right.
Because our educational systems are controlled by whites. Our media is controlled by whites.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then we have these religious institutions who lots of people are being looked up to, but those people are gatekeepers to white racism.
That's right. Well, listen. But listen, Brother
they
Frank.
They protect white racism.
My
so
time.
So we run to the churches.
My time, no, brother. Keep that fire. Hold it up. We're gonna continue this conversation on Wednesday. So, my brothers and sisters listening, I'm gonna continue this conversation on Wednesday. You can join us in that conversation by dialing 215-490-9832. Brother Frank, I appreciate you. We end this program.
Okay, brother, take your one love.
You bet. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. And Dr. Bobby Wright said, menticide is a deliberate and systematic destruction of a group's mind with the ultimate objective being extermination of that group. So we as African people must control our mind, not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because we as African people under the feet of African people is all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do without, and they don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, let's free our mind. Shemhotep, that means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you. Have a blessed and wonderful day, family. Be with us back on Wednesday. Peace.